Welcome to the podcast series, Planning Future Healthcare Environments. I am your moderator, Umar Riggs from Riggs Web Design. And today we have Greg Page of Page Healthcare Developments. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. Good morning.
How you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Pretty good. The coffee is hot. I got Monday coffee, so I'm ready to go.
That's a great thing.
Okay. So, tell us about yourself, where you're from, and your background.
Well, just a little bit about me. I grew up in Washington, D.C. Been in the construction industry for about 23 years. I own and operate Page Building Group, which is made up of Page Healthcare Development and Page Construction. And basically what we do is we work with community-based outpatient health facilities that are either campus edge or located within the community in underserved neighborhoods. So we focus on federally qualified health centers that provide basic services such as primary care, pediatric health care, dentistry, behavioral health, and in some cases, ophthalmology or optometry and pharmacy.
Okay. So how did you end up becoming a healthcare, real estate development, and construction specialist?
Well, it's funny because back in, I guess it was about 1994, I made the decision coming out of undergrad that I was not going to take a job with a construction or engineering firm that could not offer me healthcare as a specialty. As you might know, many of the larger construction companies, they are broken down into silos where they might have a retail division. They may have a highway division. Some have, you know, a vertical which is focused in airports or schools. And the firm that I signed on with, which was Pepper Construction, they actually had a division focused solely into healthcare. And that was one of the reasons why I chose to move to Chicago and hire on with them. And I was assigned to Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's on the west side of Chicago, where we were building all types of things. I mean, renovating, you know, from a basic hallway to angiography suites to ORs and just some basic, you know, medical office space. So it was from that point, I continued that focus with other larger firms such as McDivitt Street and Bovis, which became Bovis Lend-Lease, and left them. Built a few hospitals with them, left them, went to work for Healthcare Realty Trust in Nashville, Tennessee, where we focus solely in medical office buildings, which is either connected to the hospital or just on the hospital's campus. So I've been in this space for a very long time, over 2 million square feet of experience. I've been there, done that, seen it. And I kind of have a real affection for what's happening today and how COVID has impacted the infrastructure of healthcare. We could see it coming. Those of us that work in the industry, you know, the infrastructure is basically it's just not enough. I mean, we don't have enough facilities, and that's being proven today, where you're having to, you know, pitch tents in parking lots and open up old closed grocery stores and convention centers to create space for beds, because we just don't have enough for a pandemic such as this.
Wow. So, Greg, tell me about a few healthcare projects that you've done and the role you've played in bringing those projects to full circle online to completion. So tell me about some of the healthcare projects that you've done.
Well, lately we've worked with a lot of mainly outpatient facilities. So from single story clinics to expansions of a community health center. I'll give you an example of what we're doing in Savannah, Georgia right now. We're working with a health center down there that purchased an old retail location. It's roughly about 14,000 square feet. And we're basically turning that facility into a medical office. And it was never designed to be that. So there's a lot of things that go into it. I mean, in terms of how you approach the site, the parking associated with the site, ingress, egress, how the patient to get to and from the space, the emergency exits, the ambulance pull up for folks that could possibly have an episodic situation in the exam room, where you've got to get that patient out of that clinic and over to the hospital. So we look at all things associated with the delivery of that care and how that environment is going to affect that. And we work with the architects and the engineers, and you know, we associate the costs. I mean, we go through from top to bottom what it's going to take to get that facility ready for them to see patients and provide quality care. So we're at the stage down there now that construction is underway. We've made it through the permitting process with no major issues. We did find a few things that were kind of some aha moments in terms of the engineering that was used. This building was built in 1982, I believe. So, you know, obviously there were some code things that we needed to address. The roofing, which you wouldn't think that you would have to, you know, address the roof, but we actually had to address the roof because of the mechanical system that we wanted to use for the clinic. What they used for warehouse space and retail space is not the same thing that we would use to provide care, to condition the space to provide care. So we go all the way through the system, top to bottom, and we get them from concept all the way through the design process, from conceptual design, schematic design, design development, and even into 100% construction documents, and then walk them through the permitting process. And then we oversee the construction because construction is a local business. You have national contractors that work, you know, from DC to California, but you better believe if they're working in the city, they have a local office because it is a local business. It is the subcontractors that make it happen, and make no mistake about it. So we get that. We understand that. We're not going to be the contractor on every job, but we can be the owner's rep or the project manager or the developer, where we help them with the financing as well. So, you know, it all depends on what a client needs. But this client in particular already had a grant. We didn't help them with their grant. They already had their grant awarded from HRSA and HHS. So, but we've been through that process before. So we understood, you know, hey, look, these are the requirements that they're going to, you know, place upon that those grant dollars that are coming from the federal government. These are the things that you need to do to make sure that you're meeting those requirements and you're staying, you know, in good graces as we relate to those funds and how those funds are supposed to be used and what they can be used for. So we get that. We understand that. And we help the other team members that may not have worked with federal grant dollars understand, you know, the importance of knowing what's right and what's not capable.
Oh, wow. Sounds a little more than I thought as far as, you know, working with in this healthcare space with some of these healthcare centers. Walk me through, to help me thoroughly understand, walk me through kind of a generic scenario with a community health center or kind of a health facility that comes to you for help from a real estate and construction perspective. Can you walk me through kind of a generic scenario?
Yeah, it's interesting you use the word generic because we get all types of calls. You know, we get calls from clients that are in different phases of the project. Some just, hey, I got an idea. We just wanted to see if you could help us kind of think through the strategy to get us from we think we need to move to we need a whole new campus. And in some cases, we've helped clients determine, you know, their space program or the utilization of their space, and have come to the conclusion once we walk them through a planning process that you really don't need to move. You're not using the space effectively and efficiently. So we can make some modifications to the existing space that they have to increase efficiency so that they can get more patients through. Because, you know, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is the amount of patients that they can see, because that generates revenue. So for them. And so if we can increase the efficiency of an existing space, that's better than them, you know, taking on new debt or having to wait for the next federal grant round to come out for infrastructure improvement.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. So how do you come to that? How do you come to that conclusion when you meet a health center? What tools do you use to assess where they are, what they have, and where they need to go?
You know, the way we approach it is we ask the right questions, right? Part of, you know, our slogan is ask, listen, create. So the very first thing we want to know is tell us about your practice. You know, tell us, you know, how many how many PAs do you have? How many, you know, providers, you know, how many folks do you have at the front check in, check out area? You know, what about your storage? How many exam rooms do you have? So we walked them through a complete inventory or we have them walk us through an inventory of how they're using that space from a provider perspective, from, you know, the exam rooms to offices and conference space, everything that's associated with providing care and touch points for those patients. And then we take that and we do the calculus because we've seen so many clinics. You know, we can give them examples on the ready of, hey, here's what this clinic is doing in Philadelphia, or here's what this clinic is doing down in South Carolina. So we have conceptual examples that we can share with them and models of care that we can share right then and there to say, hey, this may be a better way. Have you looked at this? You know, how are you placing your nurses stations, and then, you know, can that nurses station see at least 7 to 8 exams so that they can control the flow? So it's just different questions that we'll ask them that will tell us a lot of what we need to know. Then we take that information and we get back with the engineers and architects, and then we work through a conceptual layout session, and we come back with, you know, 2 to 3 options of, hey, here's some things that you can do to either improve that space, or we need to go find you a new site. Because what you are asking us to do cannot be done in the facility that you have.
What are some of the things you look for when engaging with healthcare clients, and what markets do you currently serve?
Right now, we're working in the Midwest, the Mid-Atlantic, and in the South. So we go as far as Wisconsin and as far south as Savannah, and all points in between. We have about probably 7 community health center projects going at any one time. And they are in different stages of the process. Some may just be feasibility. Some will be in the construction process. Maybe we've gotten a call because there's a project that has gone off the rails, or the communication has broken down between the owner, the architect, and the contractor. So we've been pulled into situations such as that, or we've been asked to take over a project. So we get all kinds of different calls. But the first thing that we look for is we want to know how well the health center is doing, and there's a number of different indicators that we can look for. You know, we look at the track record, you know, the history, what kind of patient base do they have? What is the patient mix? You know, and then, you know, where are they trying to go? What do they have a strategic plan? Because a lot of that information helps us help them. Because we can look at the strategic plan and ask questions about what it is you said you wanted to do and how it is you said you wanted to get there. And we put that juxtaposed to what you've asked us to do and why it matters. Because if, you know, one of the things we tell health centers up front is, look, you have to be ready when the announcement is made. If the announcement from the federal government is made about a new grant round or, you know, grant opportunity, And they just, you know, sometimes they pop up. They give no real notice as to when this stuff is coming out, and it shows up. They give them some kind of an indication, but they never give them an actual date. It's kind of like in the fall or maybe in the spring, you know, that kind of thing. So what we do is we tell health centers, hey, the best thing you can do is you can invest in being ready, and by that I mean the readiness of your project. You know, do you know where you want to go? How does that relate back to your strategic plan? Have you identified a site? Do you have land within your portfolio that you studied to see if you can expand there? You know, why would you want to expand there? Is that a zip code that you cover? Are you approved in that zip code, and things of that nature? So we go through all of the checkpoints on the front end and get them through what we call a feasibility, or what's called a feasibility, to take them through the conceptual planning and maybe even on into investigating the site, the soils at the site, survey information, boundary and topo, and, you know, the programming to make sure that we can fit not just the facility, but the adequate parking as well, because that matters. You know, if I build you a very nice facility and the parking is terrible, then guess what? The reputation of that health center is going to be terrible. It doesn't matter that you have marble floors, which most of them don't have marble floors. I would just use that as an analogy, but it matters. Simple things like, you know, are your employees able to safely park and get in and get out? You know, these are all the things, these are all the type of questions that has to be raised in order to make an effective plan so that both the patients and the staff are happy to work and get care from this location.
Okay. So have you helped healthcare clients with kind of the readiness and getting ready and prepared? Have you helped any healthcare clients with that?
We have, and we've engaged with clients over the last 10 years in readiness and preparedness for, you know, future rounds of infrastructure funding that may come out from different agencies. Like, so HHS might have some. You may see an announcement from Commerce. You may see most of the announcements come from HRSA. But I mean, there's different rounds of funding for different things. Like right now, they just put out $1.3 billion for COVID that's going to health centers. And, you know, it's not really clear what those funds are being used for. And I think a lot of it is testing and keeping the staff working and that sort of thing, keeping health centers going. But I would imagine that at that number and that level of $1.3 billion, that there may be some infrastructure money in that. But again, the announcement is not very clear. So you know, we're talking to different, you know, folks, different touch points and clinics about this very conversation of what can we use these funds for? You know, outside of the obvious, right, of just paying physicians and paying the nurses and the staff and keeping them going. You know, hey, if I have a existing construction project, you know, and my budget's tight, can I use some of these grant dollars? Because typically and usually you cannot do that. So it is specific to what you use the grant money for. It says it in the notice of grant award. So we've helped health centers, you know, for, like I said, over the last 10 years, prepare and be ready to have a packet ready to submit for grants. And we've helped win, I want to say, roughly about $35 million in grant funds over the 10 years to help these centers. And it's a passion for me because, you know, I grew up in an environment, as I said, I grew up in Washington, D.C. I come from an environment where we didn't have access to healthcare. You know, it was a food desert. You know, all the social determinants that we discussed today existed where I grew up in the 70s in Washington, D.C. So I get it. You know, my primary care came from a community health center. I did not know it at the time because I was a kid, but it was a federally qualified health center in Southwest D.C., and it's still there today. And this was in 72, 73. So I understand the importance of these facilities and what they give to the community and you know, providing the safety net and things of that nature. But more has to be done. This whole process has to be evaluated after this COVID, post-COVID, to see what more can be done, because it is alarming that so many folks in the Black and Brown community are impacted by COVID at the rate that they are. It's a very alarming rate. But it has a lot to do with the social determinants, if in my opinion. I'm not a physician, but in my opinion, I mean, obviously, you know, the things that we're hearing on NBC and CNN and places like that about the percentage of African-Americans that have been impacted by this is just alarming. I mean, it's staggering. In New Orleans, you know, where you know, they make up 32% of the population, but impacted 70%. So that tells me that this is a real problem, and it's a problem for the nation, you know, because if it's a problem for African Americans, it's a problem for everybody.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question: what is your understanding of how COVID-19 has impacted both the healthcare industry and the communities which you typically serve?
Well, as I said, I mean, I think, you know, one thing is very clear, and most folks are talking about it now, is that the impact that it's having on the African American community, it is just astounding. The numbers are astounding. So I think that, you know, post COVID, I mean, we're going to have to look at this whole healthcare system as we know it. The for-profit model in the country is an interesting. It'll be an interesting study when it's all said and done, as to, you know, how do we prepare for what may come back in the fall? There's talk about, you know, hey, you know, we may come out of this in July, or whatever the case may be, in August. But what if this comes back? Are we going to roll out the same plan that they rolled out with tents in the street and things of that nature for testing sites? And all, I mean, we should be prepared for you know, an outbreak. I mean, we were warned that it could come. And why we weren't ready is that's a whole another whole discussion. But I think that, you know, we've got to take a step back and look at the system from, you know, community health centers all the way up to, you know, the trauma hospitals. And how do you better prepare for something like this? I mean, I think what's happening now has given the test, has given the nation the test as to why it's important not to shut down rural hospitals. And you know, why it's important to make sure that you have a working safety net, because, you know, to go back and start to open up hospitals that have been shut down for 3 years or 5 years or whatever the case may be, that's not an easy task, because you're talking about providing care and, you know, and controlling infectious diseases in an environment that's been mothballed for, you know, 5 to 10 years. So how do we do that? You know what I mean? From a quality care perspective. So it's not just, you know, flip a switch and it's there. I mean, it's not that easy because of the type of business that it offers or the service that it offers.
Okay. I have another question for you. I'm watching CNN and they were doing a few specials, focusing on a few hospitals in Brooklyn, New York. And one of the gentlemen that they were interviewing talked about negative pressure rooms. And I'm not exactly sure what that is. Can you help me understand what a negative pressure room is and why it's important for healthcare?
Well, that's a great question. And that term has come to light lately or been used a lot lately in mainstream media, because a negative pressure room is basically used in your ICU. And it is what it's entitled. It's basically a patient room that has negative pressure, which means the air is sucked out of the room, so that no infection or germs can actually live in that environment. So it's a very sterile environment. It's typically, those rooms are typically found in ICU. You won't find it in, you know, in the basic patient room. It is succinct to the ICU area, and those rooms are important when you're dealing with things like HIV/AIDS or things like COVID-19 and SARS and some of this other stuff that we've seen, you know, come to pass in the United States. So it's important to have those, and they serve a very, very serious purpose in controlling infection and things of that nature.
Wow. Okay. Very interesting. So in your professional opinion, from a construction development standpoint, what direction do we go in healthcare? Like, what should a community health center or a healthcare provider be looking at as far as from a construction and real estate perspective moving forward after this COVID-19?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because, one of the things that's become very clear to me, and it had never dawned on me before, but people present at the health centers or at hospitals and things of that nature with all types of issues, right? And right now we're dealing with COVID, and we don't know who's infected because so many people have not been tested. So we don't know who's a carrier of it. You know, we just don't know. They say you can have it and not have the symptoms, and still be able to infect up to 4 to 5 people, which can affect, you know, another 4 to 5. So one of the things that I think needs to be evaluated is how patients present. Now, today, a general example is today you show up at a community health center or just a health center, and you just walk into the waiting room. If you just a walk in and you seek help, or you're already a patient, a known patient to them, and you come in and you sit in the waiting room, you know, you're waiting for your 1 o'clock appointment. But there's no separation from a person that could show up with COVID. Like today, I mean, you know, if I showed up at a health center and I'm a carrier of this infection, I walk into the waiting room. So I'm sure there's protocol as to how to deal with that, but the unknown is a very scary thing. So I think that there needs to be some sort of evaluation done on just the presentation of what shows up at these different environments, because there could be perhaps a way to isolate that, and still provide a warm welcome and not such a sterile environment, but there has to be a way to look at that and say, you know, how do we interact with an unknown who may be carrying something unknown? And now, you know, the staff has been affected, or, you know, other folks in the waiting room has been affected. So it's just, and that's just me. I mean, I'm an engineer contractor type. I mean, I'm not a physician, as I said before, but these are just some of the things that you think about as we lay out and plan and build space. And then you look at what's happening around us. You have to wonder, is folks thinking about this for, you know, future space? You know, how do you take that? And I believe there was a segment on CNN where they talked about a rural health center that was basically testing for temperatures everyone that showed up. I mean, even the person that was there to do the news, the broadcaster, you know, they took her temperature as well before she could come into the space. But that's still the same vestibule that other patients are coming through or staff is coming through. So you may be testing in there, but I mean, if like, for example, if COVID could live in the air, and it's the same air, you know, it's not negative pressure, it's not being sucked out, it's forced air, then that area is contaminated if that person should show up positive. So I, you know, it's just things like that you should think about.
Let me ask you another question. On the news here lately, they've been talking about a lot of senior homes and senior living communities having a large outbreak of the COVID-19 virus, where there may be 75 patients and 55 of the 75 have come down with COVID-19. What's your take on, give me your perspective from a real estate development and construction specialist, how does something like this happen? And is there a way that you can kind of prevent or try to minimize the spread of a virus like this in kind of a senior living community?
That's a very, very good question. And there's a lot of people trying to figure that out right now as we speak, because it's happening from coast to coast. I mean, there's, you know, it happened up in Pennsylvania, it happened in Maryland. I mean, it's happening in a lot of places. And one suggestion was that, well, maybe, you know, folks might want to consider taking their, you know, their loved ones out of the senior facility. And I think that's a little drastic. I mean, because in some environments, I mean, it's, you know, bringing them home could create even more of a hazard to them. So the way that the senior housing is laid out, from, you know, just the community space that it offers, the way they commune and share and eat breakfast or eat lunch and dinner. I mean, it's a gathering, right? And the rooms are the way they, you know, laid out, you know, next to one another, you know, with party walls between them, and separation as if it was a regular apartment. But the way that they operate those spaces, I'm not sure that you can protect against it based on the operation and the service that's provided and the closeness that it takes to provide the care to the senior, you know, and it all depends on what level of care you're providing. You know, if it's memory care, if it's just assisted living, or, you know, or just adult apartments, you know, independent living. So it I don't know. I mean, I don't think anyone knows at this point, but that's something that's definitely going to have to be addressed going forward.
And Greg, I appreciate your time. And how can people learn more about you and your business and what it is that you offer?
So our business, you can go to our website, www.pagehealthcare.com or www.pagebuildinggroup.com. We offer evaluations. We'll do discovery. We do feasibility. We could do program management or we can do construction. It just all depends on the need that the client may have. So we're here. We're ready to help. We believe that, you know, this fight can be won. We appreciate everything that the first responders are doing, the doctors, the nurses, and the hospital staff and the clinics. I mean, even the clinics are in this fight. We appreciate them. And you know, we're here to serve.
Greg, thank you so much for a great conversation. And I wish you nothing but the best as you continue to work with these healthcare clients.
Thank you so much.